Hello, this is John Slonina with SSTI. I'm speaking today with Bob Starzynski, Director of Innovation Works Innovation Adoption Grant Fund. The Innovation Adoption Grant Fund was selected as the 2009 recipient of SSTI's Excellence in TBET Award in the category Improving the Competitiveness of Existing Industries. Bob, can you describe the focus of the Innovation Adoption Grant Fund?
Sure, John. The Innovation Adoption Grant Fund was established as a way to help more established manufacturing companies, small manufacturing companies, meaning by our definition less than 250 employees, help those small manufacturing companies that are already established bring new products to market and new manufacturing processes into their shop floor that help them to remain competitive or to become more competitive in the global marketplace. So the way the fund works is we will help to offset the cost of outsourced research and development that those companies have when they need to engage a research entity like a university or another nonprofit, what we call Center of Excellence. So it's a way, again, to help those companies create new products and manufacturing processes to innovate for the future so that they can remain competitive in the global marketplace.
Then how long has the program been around?
We started the program with a couple of beta projects in 2004 and then rolled it out across the region in 2005. And we did it as a way to try to bring our funding or distribute our funding more evenly across our landscape. As southwestern Pennsylvania is comprised of a large metropolitan area, meaning Pittsburgh, surrounded by a lot of smaller communities that are more rural in nature, industrial in nature, economically distressed in nature. We wanted to find a way to invest in those communities by supporting the industries that already existed there.
Well, how big are the size of your grants you offer?
Our grants go up to $50,000. We don't have a bottom limit on them, but the smallest grants that we've done are about $7,000 or $8,000. And our average grant size is about $32,000.
That's interesting. How many grants have you given over the life of the program?
Well, we've had the program in existence now for about 5 years. We've awarded a little over $1.5 million to 100 companies in that time. We do have a match requirement. Companies have to pay cash into these projects as well as we have to. We have matched our grants with more than $2 million of investment from the companies themselves. And those projects have already gone on to create or retain more than 800 jobs, and that number is expected to go up because a lot of these projects are still underway or have just recently been completed. And the average cost per job in terms of dollars spent on grants to jobs created is less than $2,000 per job. So that's a pretty good return on investment by economic development standards that you can create a sustaining, well-paying job for less than $2,000.
And previously, you briefly mentioned the Centers of Excellence concept. Can you describe what types of entities these are, maybe how many that exist, and the process that you go through of pairing a company with one of these Centers of Excellence?
Sure. For the most part, the Centers of Excellence are universities, and although there's a formalized, there might be a formalized definition of Center of Excellence in terms of, a group of researchers at a university that all work on a common project or in a more established lab that receives federal funds. Our definition of Center of Excellence is more loosely based. So it might just be one researcher in the engineering department at the University of Pittsburgh who happens to have an expertise in an area where one of the companies has a need. So most of it is university-based. Our local industrial resource center, which is part of the MEP program at the federal level, provides some center of excellence support to some of our companies as well. But again, by and large, it's university researchers. And in terms of how we pair them with the companies, usually what I do, in some instances, the companies may already be engaged with the Center of Excellence when we start working with them. But in most cases, the center of excellence, or the company, excuse me, comes to me, tells me what their need is, and I go out and play matchmaker. Work with the universities. Most of the larger universities have industrial research offices or other resources that are available to help play matchmaker between the faculty members and industry.
So in your application, you're talking about the move to make the fund turn into an evergreen fund. And I was wondering if you can step through a little bit of the history of where the fund sources came from over time and your efforts then to turn that into an evergreen fund.
Sure. When we started the program, all of the funding for the program came from our state allocation through the Pennsylvania Department of Community and Economic Development. Over time, we began to realize that the program really resonated with foundations and with certain federal programs because we were working primarily, again, in economically distressed areas, and there was a good job creation and job retention component to the program. So we started to diversify the funding for the program about 2 years in by soliciting funds from local foundations, and we've also augmented that with some funding from the federal government. So that's where the kind of the history of the funding for the program fits together. In terms of making it more evergreen, when we started working with the local foundations especially, foundations by and large want to be able to kickstart a program. They don't necessarily want to sustain it for year after year after year. So in working with those foundations, they wanted to see, okay, if we can fund this program for 2 or 3 years, how can we get it to a point where it's going to be more self-sustaining? The truth of the matter is, if you have a grant fund and the dollars go out in the form of a grant with no repayment provision, there's no way to recoup that investment, so there's no way to make it evergreen. But what we did was start to introduce certain things, most notably a repayment provision, and I call it a home run provision. Basically, if a company hits a certain threshold of revenue generation 2 years or 3 years after they've done a project with us, it might trigger a repayment clause in the contract so that the company pays the money back into the system so that the next company can benefit from it. And when we do that, we don't want to create situations where we're trying to break the bank or where we are breaking the bank for a struggling company. We only want to see repayment on these projects if the projects are successful enough that the company is comfortable in repaying the grant amount back into the system.
Great. And something within the application which caught my eye is a bit of a poetic description that I'd like you to elaborate more on. There's a line, and I'll quote, "It is more effective and efficient to nourish the vegetation that already exists in these markets, small-town markets, than to rip out the existing vegetation and plant new seeds from scratch." Can you elaborate on this?
Wow, are those my words?
Yeah, that was in the application.
Sure. If you look at, and I think this is an argument for TBED initiatives in general. If you look at traditional economic development models, the whole idea is to create something from scratch or to uproot a business from another state or another region and relocate it to an economically distressed area. You know, wipe out a greenfield and build a new industrial park, or overhaul a brownfield and try and relocate an automaker to set up shop with a new facility in that brownfield location. But what we have found is that it's much more cost effective in terms of the economic development dollars expended, and there's a much higher likelihood for success. If you look at the landscape of these small towns and look at the people that are already there, the industrial base that's already there, and the know-how that's already there, why reinvent the wheel? Why try and create something from scratch when you can just increase the effectiveness of what is there.
In an application, you discuss how grants are the critical delivery mechanism for the fund. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, so the average company that I work with might have $5 million to $10 million in revenue. Company might have 15 to 50 employees, and it's a family-owned business that's been in existence for two generations. Obviously, that's smack in the middle. There might be extremes on both ends of the spectrum. But these companies, by and large, have banking relationships. They have lines of credit. They have no trouble, or they don't have too much trouble going out to find a small business loan if they're trying to buy a piece of equipment, or if they're trying to update computer systems and those sorts of things. So we don't want to get involved in providing funds that are duplicative of what companies can already access from their banks. What we try to do with this is the reason that we created this as a grant is because these companies don't want to dilute their ownership, so they don't want to give up equity. And we don't want to set it up as a straight loan because the companies might find bank loans more enticing. No, they wouldn't find them more enticing, but they already have access to them. So loans will not work because the companies, by and large, already have lending institutions that they're already working with. But if you look at the type of projects that we're trying to fund, it's projects that aren't necessarily collateralized or collateralizable for these companies. So on a development project, if the company is looking for funding, their existing banking relationship might not be able to fund those types of services. And at the same time, these are risky opportunities for a company. The company is family-owned business. They're trying to think about how do we save money for retirement, not just how do we build value into the operation. And so the idea of spending $50,000 or $100,000 of their own money to fund a project might be cost prohibitive, or it might be just challenging enough for the company to not pull the trigger. So by setting this up as a grant, we hope to help those companies make that leap of faith into the unknown with their research and development efforts.
Gotcha. I think there's a lot of practitioners probably listening to this podcast thinking, well, I could really replicate this in my community. Are there certain critical components of the program, if possibly excluded, when replicated in another community, would really limit its effectiveness? What makes the program perform so well?
Well, I think you have to approach it from a few different angles. One is before deciding to replicate it, I think you need to look in your own community and figure out if the manufacturing base already exists and if that manufacturing base is similar to the base here in southwestern Pennsylvania, where small businesses, family-owned businesses, businesses that have differentiated products in the market but that are in a need to be globally competitive. So first look at the landscape and make sure that you're creating something that is benefiting the industrial base that's already there rather than starting from scratch, as we had talked about before. But then you need to look for those other components. You need to make sure that you have centers of excellence that you can tap into, not just universities, but universities that have research capabilities, universities that might have federally funded labs or other labs that have received equipment and test capabilities and analysis types of equipment that can benefit industry as well as academia. And then on top of that, you need to have the ability to fund the program. We have been fortunate to receive funding from the Pennsylvania's Department of Community and Economic Development, as well as from some of our local foundations, and we've recently tapped into some federal sources of funding. Obviously, not every part of the country, not every state has established funds set up at the state level that can benefit these kinds of activities. And in other parts of the country, you don't necessarily have as broad of a foundation base as we have here in Pittsburgh. So funding the program is something that has to be taken into account. So you really need a magic mix of those three components in order to make the program a success.
Great. And finishing up, would you like to share any additional lessons learned from administering this program?
Well, one thing that we already touched on, and I'll go back to it because I'm still not sure that we have found the magic or the magic answer or the right answer to the problem, and that is the idea of making the program evergreen. I think increasingly as we go back to our foundation sources, we're going to we're going to have them ask us, how can you make this program more self-sustaining? And we struggle with that. We want to put repayment provisions into our grant agreements so that we're likely to see some of the money back. But if we start to strengthen those up enough so that we see all of the money coming back into the system and truly making it evergreen, we're starting to compete with commercial banks because, in effect, it becomes a low-interest or a no-interest loan program. And those types of programs already exist out there. So it's not necessarily a lesson learned as much as it is a stay tuned for the future to see how we find what kind of solution we find to the problem, because I don't think, while we've definitely made strides, I don't think that we've completely figured that out yet.
Gotcha.